Track 11. The Alcoves.
Please choose an alcove to sit in.
London Bridge was once almost entirely covered with shops and houses along its length. In 1758, these buildings were demolished, and the covered buildings were replaced with a series of stone alcoves designed to shelter people from the weather. For more than 60 years, they did just that, until the entire bridge was replaced in the 19th century. Mr. Dixon, a timber merchant who lived nearby in Limehouse, discovered two of the alcoves in a builder's yard, and he generously gave them to the park in 1860, and here they are, 250 years after they were first built as part of one of the world's most famous bridges.
My name is Bill Johnson. I'm an ex-lighterman now of the Thames. At the present, I'm 88 years of age. During the period of time working on the Thames, of course, there was a period just after the war when I used to run one of the small pleasure boats from Charing Cross Pier. And in those days, we used to point out the fact that on the old London Bridge, you could see that the lower side of the bridge was around about 15 to 18 inches lower than the upper side. And this has been put down to the fact that everybody coming from or going to London Bridge Station walked along that side of the bridge for two reasons. One is it was the shortest route, and secondly, it looked out onto the pool where there was always something going on, tugs, barges, ships. Of course, you get maybe sort of 10 or 15,000 people walking half-assed in step. It does have effect on the bridge. This is what I've been told. And of course, maybe in the days when the bridge was built, they didn't go down as far as they do today.
Please make your way to the other alcove and take a seat in there. Terry Willetts.
Probably everyone knows and remembers in 87, when the great storm, where I got dropped off from work near Victoria Park, and the person said to me, "Have you got a camera, Terry?" I said, "Not a very good one." He said, "Get in that park and take some pictures, because you'll never see this again." And I've still got them pictures with me now. And the pictures of me leaning against trees that have fell down and standing in that down holes that trees have been ripped up. And that was a great sort of, not a good memory, but a memory I won't forget by seeing all them trees. You know, I understand from reading there was about 400 trees blown down.
The Irish dramatist George Bernard Shaw stayed at a vicarage which overlooked this side of Victoria Park. It is thought he wrote the play Candida here in 1894. Setting the play in a parsonage, he sets the scene.
This desert of unattractiveness has its oasis. Near the outer end of the Hackney Road is a park of 217 acres, fenced in not by railings but by a wooden paling, and containing plenty of greenswood, trees, a lake for bathers, flower beds with the flowers arranged carefully in patterns by the admired Cockney art of carpet gardening, and a sandpit, imported from the seaside for the delight of the children, but speedily deserted on its becoming a natural vermin preserve for all the petty fauna of Kingsland, Hackney and Hoxton. A bandstand, an unfinished forum for religious, anti-religious and political orators. Cricket pitches, a gymnasium and an old-fashioned stone kiosk are among its attractions. Wherever the prospect is bounded by trees or rising green grounds, it is a pleasant place. Where the ground stretches far to the grey palings, with bricks and mortar, sky signs, crowded chimneys and smoke beyond, the prospect makes it desolate and sordid. The best view of Victoria Park is from the front window of St. Dominic's Parsonage, from which not a single chimney is visible.
Gain Wells.
Early morning, winter morning, frosty with a very low mist, sun coming up. Low mist, just about a a yard off the ground, and the sun rays shining through it was absolutely magical. But the cricket pitch was covered in newspaper. And I thought, oh, how disgraceful. How can people behave in such a way? And a car in Victoria Park Road backfired, and all these newspapers flew up in the air, round in a circle, and landed again. They were seagulls. And what had been a disgusting sight suddenly became a thing of beauty. Exactly the same image on the retina. Just shows how subjective one's views are.
Ken Walpole.
And I'm sure lots of people do that. They form an attachment to a certain bench or a certain view or a certain place in the park where they, you know, near the canal or near the ornamental lake and so on. And that becomes a kind of, it becomes a special spot in their topography, in their emotional life. And I think, again, parks are very good at that, providing these anchors in your emotional life when everything else outside the park is changing. Your job changes, the skyline changes, buildings are knocked down, new buildings come up, buses, trams turn into buses, buses turn into, you know, motor cars. And yet in the park, you know, there are trees there 120 years old and that stays the same. And I think that's very interesting about the role that the park plays as a kind of emotional anchor that doesn't change.